The Daily Mirror calls on you.
Football is about nothing unless it's about something, and what it is about.
I am going to get 100% out of you.
Welcome back to the Mirror Football Podcast. My name's Steve Anglesey. No Robbie Savage with us this week for family reasons. We have got David Pleat coming later on to run through the goaldash.com coupon and preview all the weekend's games. Goaldash.com is our game where you can win £1 million for picking the six fastest scoring teams in the leagues this weekend. First, however, we've got Mirror Football's Spanish La Liga blogger, David Cartledge, with us. David, hello.
Hello there.
Hello. Fantastic scenes in La Liga at the moment. Tell us what on earth went on with Real Madrid on Wednesday evening.
Well, it was the madness of El Madrigal. It was astounding what occurred. Real Madrid had taken the lead while not playing very well, as they usually have this season. Recently. And Villarreal managed to peg them back. But it wasn't the goal that scored what caused all the madness. It was the fact, there was the reaction from Real Madrid's players and Jose Mourinho, really. We saw a red card. Sergio Ramos was sent off. Mesut Ozil was sent off as well. Mourinho was sent off. His fourth assistant, the physio, Rui Faria, was sent off. That's the fourth time he's been sent off this season.
He always seemed so calm when he was in England, Rui Faria.
Certainly not here. There's something. It's one of these things that people at games have noticed, that Real Madrid, Mourinho has his assistants work the lines and breathe extremely hard from the touchline. They all take turns, and sometimes it catches up with them. And last night it did in a big way. But what was disappointing from Real Madrid is that they are still leading the league, of course, but it was the reaction to conceding that goal. Instead of using the time what was left to fight for a winner, there was 10 minutes or so left, they just decided to lose their heads. Completely lost their heads and bottle. It was just incredible what to say, really. It happened earlier in the season against Levante.
Yes.
When Levante showed a little bit of gamesmanship against them. Real Madrid lost their heads there. Mourinho did, Kedira did, Marcelo did, and again, it was just a complete mental collapse. It was unbelievable to watch. You couldn't believe it. Yeah, and you would think that they'd been wrong. There was nothing particularly, outrageous from the referee, but the nerves are really setting in now. Barcelona is starting to get a full steam ahead and they're closing in, and the nerves have really got to them at the moment.
And the gap, the gap was so many points. It was 10 points at one stage. It's down to 6 points now, rather. There's still a league Clásico to come, obviously, and maybe even a Champions League Clásico. When is the league Clásico?
That will be April, that one's occurring.
And that's at Camp Nou as well, so...
Yeah, exactly. They've got some tough games to go, Real Madrid. There's a place where when they go to play Osasuna, it's always an incredibly tough game for them there in Pamplona. Nobody really likes going there. They've got a particular style of playing. If you were to class a team in Spain that were close to as an English team, it would be Osasuna. They're a bit the Stoke, like there's a lot of long throws, there's a lot of high balls thrown in there. The aggressive team, they close down, they're very hard. But they can't play football. They've got some good footballers there as well. Mm. And that will be an absolutely tremendous game for Real Madrid to go and win there. And they'll use the same sort of tactics that Levante did. They're a very, they'll create a few fouls, but they're a good side. They do very well.
Yeah, I mean, the old concept of Spain, obviously, that a lot of English people have, a lot of British people have, is the Scotland in the sun thing, the knock that's been against La Liga for so many years. But this season, we've seen some real development, haven't we, in La Liga? It still is a two-horse race, obviously, but there's been a lot of progression, hasn't there?
Yeah, I mean, this is the concerning thing with Spain, is if... if a team who are maybe outside, say, the top three, top four, start and do well, and maybe have one particular player that is an outshining talent, basically, he'll end up leaving. That's the only problem with the league. If somebody does well, they'll end up going to another side. And Jordi Alba, who's playing fantastically well at Valencia, apparently sealed deal with Barcelona. And that's what happens. You have a good season, and then one of them either go to England, maybe. Matt made the point when he joined Chelsea, he was like, it was very frustrating for him to be at Valencia because it was third all the time. It was a ceiling he was hitting. And it's a case of you either join them or you go to England. Pepe Reina mentioned it before as well in the video about it as well. He said it's very hard being outside those top two, and it's what you have to do. And Athletic Bilbao, who obviously the English fans have had who have seen recently against Manchester United, again, immensely talented players, people like Javier Martinez and Muniain. And at the end of the day, they are going to end up leaving because the money will come in for them, whether it be from somebody like Manchester City or it will be Real Madrid or Barcelona that comes in for them. And it's difficult to stomach, and that's La Liga's big problem, is that they'll never truly be competitive until the TV rights issue is sorted out and there's bit of parity across the board, and then maybe we could see a more competitive league. But at the moment, it's still, yes, I find it hard. As much as I love Spanish football, it is, I'll be wrong in calling it a proper league because it isn't a proper league. It is two teams, but I personally find the rest of the league more interesting. It's more competitive. The other night we saw bottom of the league, Real Zaragoza, beat Valencia 2-1.
Yes.
And that was fantastic to see, and that's what I'm talking about. And that's what we want to see, basically.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, that Athletic Bilbao result came as a huge surprise to people who aren't familiar with the league. Does that mean it is a superior league to the Premier League? It's a very different league, isn't it?
It's so hard. It really is to define line. That's the thing. I'm always, in terms of comparisons, it's something I tend to stray away from, whether it be Messi or Ronaldo, whether it be La Liga or the Premiership. I'd rather take everything as it is. I enjoy the Premiership for certain reasons. I enjoy the Liga for certain reasons. Serie A for certain reasons, and it goes like that. But as a complete league, I would probably say the English Premier League is far better, yes, as a complete league. But there are some excellent teams who deserve acknowledgement, and like we've seen with Athletic. And I mean, Atletico Madrid, Athletic Bilbao, and Valencia are still remaining in Europa League, so we could see a winner from Spain there.
That's right. I mean, have Bilbao been playing like that all season, or did they just raise their game massively for those two? Because I mean, obviously they were great at Old Trafford as well, and then United away, they were just terrific and destroyed United in a way that we've not really seen, apart from the 6-1 the Manchester City game. We've not seen a team take Manchester United apart in such a brutal way this season, and not for many seasons really.
Oh, definitely, because I think with Manchester United, I still think a lot of teams are intimidated by them from years gone by, and that they won't go for them. And it's very frustrating for somebody who doesn't support Manchester, or somebody who is perhaps a neutral, that teams don't have a proper go at them because the weaknesses are there. Do you know what I mean? They've got the defensive partnership there who is still, you know what I mean? It's making progress, but it's still early. You know what I mean? There's still frailties there. And the full-back areas, we saw Rafael as well, still inexperienced there, and he makes mistakes ever as well. He isn't as quick as before, and also he's positional players, not too good sometimes. And I think Athletic acknowledged that, and I made the point above everything else when I was talking about Athletic before the game, is that they will not change the game for anybody. There won't be a big change between the first leg and the second leg, and there wasn't, I don't think. They played both games as if they were to the death, basically, and that's how they played. But this season, they raised the game superbly against Barcelona. That game at San Mamés was an absolute classic. It finished 2-2. And they still got to play at New Camp, so it'll be interesting to see how Athletic approach that one. They approach it like they did against Manchester United, but it'll be interesting to see whether they are carved open. I mean, recently, the Athletic have been playing really poorly, actually, since the Manchester United results. They were beaten by Osasuna before the second leg. And they were beaten by Valencia quite convincingly 3-0, and they were at home as well. And then they were just beaten by Atletico Madrid. And besides, with playing that high tempo aggressive game, the signs of tiredness do come across, and that was extremely evident against Valencia and Atletico Madrid. They looked really tired, and it's hard to keep this up over the course of the season. And also, it's an extremely thin squad as well, and they could do with more replacements coming in.
Now, we've been talking nearly 10 minutes now, and we've barely touched on the best footballer in the world and maybe the best footballer that's ever been in the world, and Barcelona. Cristiano Ronaldo is having a remarkable season for Real Madrid, isn't he? But next to Lionel Messi, I mean, can you compare the two of those?
It's very, again, like I say, I don't like to compare them. Yeah. I like to take them both in the face value. But for me, I do prefer Lionel Messi as a player. I think he's just phenomenal. He's one of the, I can describe Ronaldo in words. Messi, I don't think I can. And that's the best compliment I can give them. Really, I can say what Ronaldo's good at, and what I think he does well. But with Messi, sometimes it's beyond words, it's beyond belief, consistency, his attitude. Where he's so humble, it's incredible, and I don't think he'll ever change, really. He's just far and away. There's no comparison with him, really, with anybody at the moment. It's just Messi's out on his own.
And the big question, obviously, is, but could he do it on a cold, rainy Tuesday night in Stoke? And I think we know that the answer is yes, obviously.
Yeah, yes, he certainly could. I noticed Gary Lineker on his Twitter account wasn't very happy with people who were saying that. Messi couldn't do it against Stoke, or he couldn't do it against West Brom or whoever, or Norwich or whatever like that. And he's completely right. Messi could do it against anybody. He's far and away the best footballer on the planet right now.
There is uncertainty about the future of his manager, obviously. There's a feeling that you know, he, I guess he may have no more worlds to conquer if they retain the Champions League. They'll be the first team that ever retained the Champions League, although of course it was done when it was the European Cup, but that's by the by. Where are we with that? It seems to have gone a little bit quiet now. The Chelsea situation has kind of been resolved for a while, but what do you expect to happen to Pep Guardiola at the end of the season, and what do you expect to happen with Jose Mourinho?
Right. Well, Pep, I think he's got a lot to think about, his family and the stress. And he's always said he's never going to be a man in this game for a long, long time. And he's very clear in his ideas where he wants to do, and if he wants to do something else. So he might end up taking a break. But I think right now, I think he will sign that contract with Barcelona, because there's a new cycle at Barcelona. Every now and then there's a cycle at Barcelona, and the next cycle really is phasing out. Well, I don't say phasing out completely, but starting to begin the phase out of Xavi and people like that. And Iniesta will go on a new level. He'll begin to take the leadership role from Xavi in midfield. And Piqué will hope, for me, his form's been terrible lately, but Piqué will be asked to step into that Puyol mode. And then you'll see players this year. You've seen Cuenca and you've seen Christian Teo. Who are both fantastic, have exploded, especially Teo. He looks a remarkably good player. So Guardiola's got to oversee that, and there's a new batch of young players coming through as well, and I think that's pretty exciting for him to see these through. I think that would be a big task for him to face the key players like Xavi and Puyol. So I think that's a task enough for him there. So I think Guardiola will sign a new contract, I think, 100% on that. I'd be very shocked if he didn't.
And Jose?
Jose. The thing is, sometimes you look at it and you think, my way, you think you accept that, and then an incident occurred last night and you think, my God, you could just go to hell with all this, I can't bother at all. But he's just such an unpredictable character, it's hard to say. But Mourinho, I think he will end up staying. But I think last night was significant, though, in that I think a lot of people who were pro Mourinho and who are big Real Madrid fans who didn't have a lot wrong to say about Mourinho were disgusted with
it. It was extraordinary, yeah.
Yeah, and he didn't take the press conference last night. We've got players like Ronaldo openly on the mics, the TV, shouting robbery, it's a theft. We've got Pepe caught the referee blatantly after the whistle as well. And these players, it was just lawless last night, and Mourinho's got to keep a better stamp on that. And there's a coach in Spain called Joaquin Caparrós, and he's come out today and he said these aren't the principles of Real Madrid. And there's a lot of derision with what's gone on last night. It's been a massive, massive incident last night in Spain.
That's been terrific. David Cartledge, who's the Spanish football correspondent for mirrorfootball.co.uk, thank you so much. And now
no
it's
problem.
Time to talk. No problem. We'll see. We'll speak again. And now it's time to call in our next guest. It's David Pleat, He's here on behalf of goaldash.com. That is the game where you can win £1 million for picking the six fastest scoring teams in this weekend's football. Now it's that time of the week where we turn our attentions to the upcoming fixtures with goaldash.com, where you can win £1 million for predicting the six fastest scoring teams this week. Joining me is the former Tottenham, Sheffield Wednesday, and as a Man City fan who was present on the day that he danced across Main Road, it chokes me to say this, the former Luton Town manager David Pleat. David, are you still wearing those cream shoes?
Went in auction, £4,000 they raised for a supporter of Luton Town who bought them at an auction to raise money for their centre of excellence.
Oh, tremendous. Can you still fit into the suit?
The suit, I don't know where the suit's disappeared to, but the shoes I kept for years, I have to tell you, and it was only about 6 months ago at a function where I finally relieved myself of them.
Okay, well, I think I relieved myself of quite a few things on that day. Let's move swiftly on. When we look at the goaldash.com coupon this week, your eye's drawn inexorably to the name of Bolton. They're hosting Blackburn in a relegation six-pointer, and no one's really looking at it for football reasons. David, how well do you know Owen Coyle, and what have the last few days told us about what kind of a man Owen Coyle is?
Yes, I happened to be summarising at the game last Saturday, and I spoke to Owen before the game. I was doing a little interview on the pitch before the game, and I spoke to Owen. He told me that he'd got a little bit of illness in the camp, and one or two players might be a little bit under par. It was incredible how the events turned out. I think Owen Coyle has handled it very, very well. I also sat on a tribunal where Owen represented his club for a permit for the boy Reams from America.
Yes.
And Owen represents the club well. He's shown great dignity, showed great compassion, and I think he's proved a fine leader of his football club. And I really hope now, and I think a lot of people will hope, apart from obviously Fabrice Muamba recovering successfully, we're all praying for that. But I think privately we're all hoping now that Bolton can draw strength from that terrible situation and pick up some points and continue to play in the Premiership next year.
Now, I mean, the game itself seems irrelevant in comparison, but at the bottom of the table it's enormously relevant. First of all, are either of these teams going to score quickly and feature on your choices for the goaldash.com coupon where you can, obviously, you name the six fastest scoring teams and win £1 million? Are either of those guys teams on it?
No, they're not, because I think in a local derby like that, although I have named another early goal in a local derby, but I just think that game would be very cautious early on. Mm. It would be nerves. I think there's bound to be nerves for all sorts of reasons. And I think that they'll be determined. When you're at the bottom of the league, you're absolutely determined that your opponents don't get that first goal, because you've got to play a steady game at the start to make sure that you're still in the game after 20, 25 minutes. You know, if you open up too early and go for it too early and concede, then you tend to be chasing and it's a little bit difficult for you.
Yes, I can see that. I mean, Blackburn have pulled themselves out of the bottom three. What kind of job has Steve Keane done? How has he impressed you? Because obviously, you know, very few managers have worked in that kind of environment, haven't they?
Quite incredible, really, because I did feel at one, and I would never ever say this usually about any manager, but I thought early on in the season the viciousness of the antagonism towards both the owners and Steve Keane, who quite clearly the supporters felt wasn't capable of doing the job. He stuck to his players. He obviously hasn't been able to buy big players. They've made some rather silly statements about going for certain world stars, which was never probably a possibility, the likes of Beckham and Ronaldo or whatever it was. But I think that the fact that the people like Hanley, Lowe, Hoylett, I think it's admirable, the two Olsons, that they've come on from within. I also think Paul Robinson's been fantastic in goal.
Yes, yes.
Been the busiest goalkeeper this season, I believe, in the league, and has done really well, has regained all his stripes and should be, if he wishes to be, in the England threesome. For Poland and Ukraine. But I think Steve Keane, incredible. I think the thick skin he showed, the determination he showed, and the absolute drive not to wilt under the terrific pressure that he was coming under, must have been incredible. It looks very much at this stage as though they're going to escape the drop, and if they do, I have to say he has done magnificently well on a personal level. On a personal level, because I think 7 out of 10 managers wouldn't have been able to cope in that situation. It was as fierce as I've ever seen any manager have to take.
Yes, I totally agree. He's obviously a very steely guy, and he's got a lot about him. And the way, as you say, the way that they've done it from within has been tremendous. At the top of the coupon, we're seeing Arsenal and versus Aston Villa. Is that going to be one of your fastest scoring games? And as painful as the prospect might be now for you, can you see that the Gunners, who've come from so far back and such a desperate situation, can you see them hauling back Spurs for that third spot in the automatic Champions League qualification?
They've done very well, Arsenal, to pick up. I think they should beat the Villa. But of course, I've seen Arsenal this season against teams like Wolves, who resisted brilliantly and survived a draw there. Villa are also quite strong away from home, quite determined. But I think, although they had a fine result last time, I think they might find it difficult without the centre-half Dunn. I think he was very important to them when Dunn and Collins were playing together. I think Arsenal will beat the Villa, but it's not one of mine that springs to mind for an early goal.
No.
Because, as I said, I think Villa are quite strong as a group, and I think that Alex, away from home, knows how to get his team close together, defend the box areas, accept the crosses and deal with the crosses.
Yep.
So I think that Aston Villa will not necessarily succumb to an early goal. And the main question which you've asked me, will Arsenal finish third? I'll tell you the truth, I hope not.
I mean, looking on the squads alone, I expected Spurs to finish higher than Arsenal this season. I think a lot of people did. But they seem to be pretty much neck and neck. If you were in charge of either of those clubs, where would you be looking to strengthen in the summer to gain that North London supremacy?
It's
Spurs?
A very good question, because it's not easy to buy the players that are going to... it's no use buying to improve slightly. Unless they're going to make a major improvement, it's not worth speculating the types of money. We're talking about £20 million on players who are going to make that improvement. You see, for Arsenal, for example, a lot of criticism early on about Koscielny and not so much Vermeulen, but they've come together. They've come back after injury, particularly Vermeulen, and they've paired themselves together. That's been important for the team. I also think that they've revived their fortunes in midfield because of the improvement of Rizitsky, who's kind of taken the place in a way of Jack Wilshere. Bear in mind, he's been missing all the season. They have relied very heavily on Van Persie, but you see, Chamberlain's going to make a massive impression in the English game, and he's going to come through. So, you know, if you ask me, how do Arsenal improve? I don't know. Maybe with a very fine, orthodox, wide left man.
Yes.
At the moment, they have people like Jovinho playing there. I just feel that, you know, Walcott and Chamberlain may challenge each other for the right side position, maybe a left side position there, and maybe a world class left back, I don't know, but that would be unfair to young Gibbs, who's now beginning to progress well. So it's easy for people to say, you know, where is that link? Sometimes the link is the 5% that the manager might be a new voice. It might be the best signing they might make, with all respect to Pat Rice, who's had a wonderful career there. It might be a change of coach, change of voice, that might just make the difference to that group. But it's a group that has proved this season a great resilience, because they were getting hammered. I saw the game at Old Trafford when they lost 8 goals.
Hmm.
And my word, they were square, they were open, they lacked leadership. And all season, you know, the pundits have been saying they lack leadership. Well, they ain't doing too badly at the moment.
That's right.
Tottenham also, it'd be very, very difficult to improve Tottenham considerably. They have done very, very well this season, played very attractively. Obviously, at centre-back now, they have Dawson injured, King's been injured. They have Bassong away. They have Gallos now, who's probably coming nearly towards the end of his contract. So maybe there'll be a centre-back signing, perhaps. I don't know. I think they've got two fine right-backs. If Norton comes back from Norwich, and they have Walker doing well. I love Asso Okoto's passing ability from full-back.
Mm.
Not easy. Maybe a goalkeeper to really challenge Friedel, who's done marvellously well. Because Cudicini's done fantastic after his injury, but he's still there. And Gomez possibly might be sacrificed this summer and move back into Europe. So you know, a front player, maybe a very top front player, if Adebayor doesn't stay because of contractual reasons with Manchester City, etc. Maybe a very top front player to put the eggs in one basket. But not easy to improve sides that are in the top four or five in the Premiership. It's very difficult, much easier said than done.
Mm. And finally, in the Premier League, you'd be tempted to look at the goldash.com coupon and name Norwich, who are playing Wolves, as one of the six fastest scoring teams who could win you £1 million. David, are you going to go with the Canaries as one of your six fastest scorers?
I am, actually.
Yes.
I am. They're one of my six. They're one of my six because I saw the Wolves game at the weekend, of course. They were a bedraggled side in the end. I thought United were very haphazard in the last 15 minutes after they scored their fifth goal and could have easily scored more. They were trying to walk the ball in the net. Norwich is solid, whether it's Holt, Morrison up front with Jackson, it doesn't matter. They've got well organised. I like their diamond shape in midfield. Houlihan behind the front two is very effective, and the work that the two wide players in the diamond, often Pilkington and Sermon, do, I think is very, very well organised for the team. They know when to pressure. It's hard work. He has to make his substitutions usually because of those two wide men are doing the work from in to out. They haven't got two natural wide players like, say, Man United have, who can pin the opposite fullbacks. That work often has to be done by the wide midfield players in that diamond shape. So Norwich at home, I love the canary colour. I love the bright, it always seems to be sunny when I go to Norwich, and the bright yellow shirts and everything about it has given a colour to the Premier this season, to the Premiership. And I think Norwich are capable of getting an early goal, and they'll be going for it because Mr. Lambert will be telling his players, you know, hit them hard early and see if they get, down demoralised, not necessarily demoralised. But when you're losing games and you lose an early goal in a consequential game, then you think, cool, not again, it's happening again.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to get out of it.
Yes, it's a difficult mindset. I mean, Norwich have run out of steam a little in the home straight now, but it's probably understandable. If you're Terry Connor, though, how are you going to stop Wolves hemorrhaging those goals like they have done? I think they've let in 22 goals in the last five games now.
Well, it sounds very simple because it's not usually one player, but I saw Roger Johnson defend tremendously well, I have to say, at both Arsenal and it was at Tottenham, I think, when they got a draw too, where he was defending very deep. Now, at Birmingham, he defended deep with Dams.
Hmm.
He defended deep and he did very well. He likes heading. He's excellent at heading the ball away and in the opponent's box. And I just feel that when I looked at Stearman last week and Besong, I thought the cover they gave to Ward was absolutely atrocious. Not necessarily just their fault. They had a young midfield, of course. O'Hara and Henry didn't play.
Yes.
And the cover for Valencia's runs, both with and without the ball, was very, very poor. Now, he's got to sort that out. He's got to get either Jarvis dropping deeper and narrower to try and protect that pass out to the wide players. And I just think he's got to get Johnson back in that centre of defence. Or even gambling, which he could do, because Foley can attack from right back. He's a good passing player. Certainly not a midfield player, what I saw last week. If Foley plays as a right wing back, maybe Ward as a left wing back, and stick Johnson in between Stearman and Besong, I think they may need to tweak their system.
Yes.
I would certainly go. I remember years ago, a famous manager, who's now passed away, Andy Beattie, doing this many years ago when he took over Plymouth Argyle when they were absolutely on their knees, and he played with three centre backs. I think it just might be a clue that Terry Connor should consider.
Yes. Okay, so we know that's one of your six selections. Who are the rest of those six teams who are going to score first and potentially win it?
Leicester, who've disappointed me a little bit this season because I thought Nigel Pearson, who is a good manager, would really bounce onto what Sven had accumulated there before he left. It hasn't quite happened for them. They've been in and out. They've got the FA Cup adventure out the way at Chelsea last weekend. It's a strange one, this, because many people say, well, Hull City have got a good defensive record. But I really do believe Leicester, this is their kind of last chance saloon. If they don't win Saturday, all thoughts of any chance of a playoff position will go. But I think if they can win on Saturday, they've still got an outside chance. And I think with Beckford and Nugent, they've always got a chance of a goal. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they scored early. So that's my next selection. Leicester City to score early against Hull.
OK, so we've got Leicester City, we've got Norwich City. Who else have we got?
I'm going next for a local derby in Lancashire, where I think that Terry Wesley and John Dreyer, the staff that left Stevenage for Preston, just maybe beginning to turn the corner, just had an away win. Bury have had a bad home defeat at the weekend. I think that Preston North End have underperformed. I think now they've got Hume back. I believe Proctor isn't back in the team. He's a promising boy. I like him. I just think that now Wesley's ideas will be coming through at Preston, and I expect them to get an early goal against Bury. That's a hunch more than a positive statistic that, yep, that I might be drawing on.
Okay, so we've got Norwich, we've got Leicester, we've got Preston. Who else have we got?
I'm going for Middlesbrough. I thought they played quite well in an away game last night. Now they've done poorly away in the last two or three games. They need a win. They're just outside, and watch the teams now that are striving desperately for positions in to get promotion. And I think Middlesbrough, just outside now, will have a real chance against Bristol City, who at the moment are finding it very, very difficult to get a result. They just made poor defensive mistakes to lose a home game. They can't get when Derek Innes first went there, he had that bounce back ability thing, which clubs often do when managers come. That's worn off now. Bristol City have injuries, which is difficult for them. But I just feel Middlesbrough, there was a nice sense of rhythm in their play, their passing at West Ham. I thought that they were a better team than West Ham in the midweek game. And I feel that Middlesbrough now need to win home games. Could have Robson back, perhaps, who can put the ball on a sixpence from set plays. But I think generally I like what they did against West Ham, and I think they're ready for a home win. And I think they can score an early goal.
Okay, so we're down to the last two then. Who are they?
Yes, I'll go for Liverpool to beat Wigan at home. I think they've got enough firepower. I think Wigan did marvellously well at Norwich. They played really well at Norwich, deserved to win. They did very well last weekend as well.
They did.
Deserved to win once again, got pegged back. There must be much heart in the club. But I just see Liverpool having too much quality for Wigan, and I think that they're quite capable of getting an early blast against Wigan.
Okay, Liverpool. And the final one?
The final one is Huddersfield against Charlton.
Jordan Rhodes by any chance?
Jordan
Rhodes by any chance?
Well, yes, I think that Rhodes, he scored again. He's back on song, but he's been quiet by his own standards. Back on song. Huddersfield under Grayson, a real push now for promotion. They'll be really up for this game, because this is the big one, to beat the champions elect, which they will be. They'll be champions, Charlton. They've made a wonderful run, and they're in a great position. But I think Huddersfield are good enough to beat Charlton at home, and I think home advantage is going to be so important for them. And Rhodes and Novak, that type of player is capable of getting an early goal. So that's my sixth selection. Huddersfield Town to beat Charlton Athletic.
Excellent. Okay, well, those could potentially win you £1 million with goldash.com. David, what would you do with £1 million?
£1 million. Goodness me. Very difficult. I would pay the nurses more.
Yes.
Just give them a little bit more.
That's a very, very good thing to say in this week, obviously. I think I might start building a time machine back to 1983 and have a quick word with Rady Antic. But never mind, David. Well, thank you very much. That's been a great pleasure.
It goes in cycles. Don't worry.
It does.
I said at the time to Peter Swells, don't worry too much. Luton will never get back. City will get back quickly.
Yes.
And sure enough.
And so it proved.
Mind you, Luton stayed eight years in that top division, which was quite incredible. On the strength of that result, staying in the league, they stayed 8 years. Manchester City got back very quickly, had their downs afterwards, of course, succumbed to the third division, didn't they?
Yes, absolutely.
But then came back up again, and now they're the biggest of everybody, or one of the biggest.
One of the biggest. Well, you know, we hope to see Luton back up there one day, and we hope to talk to you again soon, David Pleat. Thanks very much.
Much obliged.
So thanks very much for listening to this shortened Mirror Football podcast this week. Shortened for obvious reasons. Our thoughts are with Robbie Savage and his family, obviously. And thanks very much to David Cartledge. Thank you so much to David Pleat. We'll be back with David Pleat again next week. And I hope you agree that was fascinating, getting his insight, tactical insight. There's a few, very few people who can express tactical things as clearly as David Pleat can. And thanks to you for listening. And we'll see you next week.
The Daily Mirror calls on you.
Football is about nothing unless it's about something. And what it is about...
I am going to get 100% out of you.
Oh, well, of course, it is a different life.